Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly.
What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule 1 drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to Toking and Talking with your host, Russ Belville.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Time for Toker Talk Radio, and we got a lot to cover in this second hour. Coming up after the first break, we'll do some Reefer Madness Debunked because, oh my goodness, last week, CEO Joel Stanley from the Charlotte's Web folks out there in Colorado authored an op-ed in response to the DEA's recent statements that the so-called hemp-derived CBD oil, which you might as well call it unicorn-derived CBD oil because there's as much CBD in a unicorn as there is in a hemp stock. Anyway, it says that this hemp-derived CBD oil is legal, and not only is the DEA wrong, but the DEA is violating federal law by even saying that it's illegal. So we'll get you into the mind of someone who's got a business very, very dependent on making sure desperate parents all across the United States who have epileptic kids can't grow their own clone of Charlotte's Web and treat their kid cheaply. They instead have to pay hundreds of dollars per gram to get the Charlotte's Web oil. We'll get into that after the first break. And then after our safety briefing, we'll tackle that drug war data mining. New study out. Once again, how many times do we have to say it? Legalizing marijuana doesn't make kids want to smoke more marijuana because the only way kids could smoke marijuana is illegally anyway. They already have their hookup. They already have their connection. Opening a pot shop they can't get into doesn't change their world any. So we'll get into that, and we'll get into more of the marijuana stories that are going on. But before we do, we got to get back to this Jeff Sessions, the Sling Blade Hobbit, the Keebler Gump. Oh, my God, this guy. The speech he gave, the DARE speech, it's really entertaining to listen to. I got to say, from a very dark, dark comedic standpoint, it's very interesting to listen to because the guy is just the distilled essence of 1980s drug warrior. Like, we had found him fossilized in amber and extracted some of the DNA and recreated the entire 1980s drug war mentality in human form. I don't know how the scientists pulled it off, but here we got him. Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, the second most redneck name I can think of after Jim Bob Cooter, the offensive coordinator for the Detroit Lions. This mentality, he really does think that the way that we're going to win is by stigmatizing drug users. He said that numerous times in numerous ways throughout numerous speeches, that part of what we need to do is that right now drug use is too cool. Too many people are for drug use. They think drug use is all right. And we need to stigmatize drug use. We need to wag our finger and tell people how naughty and awful and dirty and disgusting they are and terrible people. They use drugs. Well, we had that. You know, Sessions keeps pointing back to the 1980s, right? And here's where the disconnect is with Sessions and these people that look at the Just Say No era, because they perceive of drugs and how to reduce the harm from them simply as a question of how many people are using drugs. Because to them, drug use in and of itself is evil. It's malum in se. It's evil in and of itself. It's not a question of whether or not your drug use is harming you or harming anyone else. It's a question of just the fact of whether you're using them or not. It's malum in se. It's just something that is at its heart evil. And to them, they can't even imagine that you would not punish people for doing evil. Like, it's just absurd to them. Their mind can't even grasp this idea because they're so locked into this thing that drug use is a moral failing. Drug use is a thing you ought not do. It's a bad thing. And not if it's alcohol or tobacco or prescription pills. That's fine. Yeah, go ahead and do that. But illegal drug use, you know, the stuff that grows south of America, the stuff that grows in more tropical and temperate regions, the stuff that the black and brown people make money off of, those are the bad drugs. Yeah, not the companies helmed by white guys. They're fine. But this idea is based on that understanding. Their idea, all of their drug policies are based on this understanding that drug use is evil. We must vanquish evil. The fewer people that are committing evil, the better, because then there's less evil. That's as far as it goes to them. And it's important that our side understands this, because that mindset is shared by a lot of people. And while they're coming around on marijuana because they don't believe marijuana use is evil anymore, they're not there on cocaine, meth, heroin, any other drug. They still see that, much like Jeff Sessions does, as just pure evil. You're snorting a line of cocaine, well, that's just evil. It was in front of you and everyone told you it was evil, and yet you chose to do evil. That's the way they see the world. When in fact, the way that it works is their drugs are not evil or good. They're just substances. They're things. It's guys like Sessions and Republicans like him can make the most impassioned arguments about freedom when that tool is a gun. But they can't apply that same thinking when that tool is a drug. They don't understand. They can't. But they'll tell you all the time, guns don't kill people, people kill people, and we shouldn't judge all law-abiding gun owners by just the few that go out and spray bullets randomly out in the public square. Guns are just a tool. They're not good or evil. You can use them for good to protect your family or to hunt for food, or you can use them for evil to commit crimes and murder. But they can't take that same logic and apply it to drugs. Most of us that use drugs are like most of the people who have guns. We own them, or we use them. We like them. They give us a kick, a thrill, whatever. For some of us, they have a very valid purpose in the fact that we may be using the drugs for medical purposes or the guns for protection purposes or what have you, right? But they can't see that. They can't see that. And so for them, when they look at the 1980s, they see this chart. Let me reverse myself here. They see this chart, right? It starts way up here. That's how many people are using drugs. Look at all those people using drugs. Oh my God, they're 14%. Of the people, this was in the Jeff Stam thing we played the other day, right? 14% of the people are using drugs. And then they see that chart from 1980 to 1992 go, boom, all the way down. And they look down to 9%. They see, we eliminated 5% of the evil in the world. We went from 14% of the people using drugs to 9%. And as Stam said, it may not be winning, but it sure as hell isn't losing, right? So to them, they just think, well, evil declined. We went from 14 to 9. But what they don't see is that while you can have punitive policies that reduce the use of drugs, they exacerbate in an exponential fashion the harm those drugs cause to society in response. He can, with a straight face, talk about how, well, the heroin's so much more potent than it used to be, and the marijuana potency has increased all these years. You know why? Because you prohibited it. You forced the people to think about, all right, well, shit, I can't grow weed outside. Now I'm going to have to figure out how to grow it inside. And once I grow it inside, how am I going to deal with the lights? And, oh, but, you know, now that it's prohibited, and it's so prohibited, I got to grow the bomb-ass weed, or else the other guy that's dealing weed's going to, you know, cut me out of the business, because we can't advertise the flavor. We can't advertise the organic production or whatever else that might make the product better. All we can advertise out of that bag is the smell, the sight, and the kick that it's got. Same thing happened in alcohol prohibition. A country that was a bunch of cider drinkers, a bunch of beer drinkers, became a bunch of whiskey drinkers and rum drinkers. Because when you had that trunk on the Model T and you were smuggling that Canadian whiskey over the border, Canadian alcohol over the border, are you going to put a keg of beer back there or a case of whiskey? Well, you're going to pick the case of whiskey because you can sell that for more. It's more potent. And the people wanting to get it are going to want the more potent version as well. So, yes, the people using drugs from 1980 to 1992 went from 14% to 9%, but the purity of heroin doubled. The price of heroin was halved, and similar changes were found with marijuana. In fact, every drug, except marijuana, every drug from 1980 to 1992, the era Sessions is talking about, every drug got more potent and cheaper. Got more potent and cheaper. Every single drug. The only drug that didn't happen for was marijuana. It did get more potent, but it also got more expensive. And in that, they think they had a success. If we keep the price of weed high, then fewer people will use it, and they'll use it less often. And there's some kernel of truth to that. But also, by taking a dried flower of limited effect as far as drugs go, when you look at the scale of drugs, people who really want to get messed up aren't looking to do it on weed. They're looking for the really heavy-duty, potent stuff to have some fun, right? Weed's lid down there in a little social drug, little soft drug era, right? That's not the big power players, right? So you took this little flower that's a weed that grows everywhere that would be ubiquitous and would be the price of tea bags, and you jumped its price as high as $300-$500 an ounce. You made it worth killing over. If weed were ubiquitous, nobody would be ripping someone else's garden. Nobody would be trying to defend their garden with guard dogs and razor wire and guns. Cartels wouldn't be battling over turf to distribute something that costs the same as tea. It would be like the great Lipton Bigelow Wars of the 1910s, right? No, I better stay in my lane. I'm not sure about the history of tea. Maybe there were wars over tea. Actually, we did start a revolutionary war over tea taxes, didn't we? So stay in your lane, Russ. But still, this is just this drug war thinking. If there's just less people using drugs, well, then that's better. Well, no. I mean, if we really wanted to have fewer people using drugs, we could go the Myanmar route. We could go Singapore. We could go, like Qatar and those kind of places where they'll execute you. They'll just execute you for possession of drugs, lash you in the public square. And yeah, those places have far lower drug rates. They sure do. But I don't know if that's the kind of country you want to live in, do you? Where your college kid might get caught with a roach and next thing you know, he's being caned in the public square. Is that what you want? Well, if you're Jeff Sessions, yes, that's the kind of world he would like. He would like that. It's just so plainly obvious that these guys don't understand how drug use works, who uses drugs, how drug markets function. And throughout his remarks, he kept trying to make this point about treatment's okay. It's great to have treatment and prevention. But if you don't have law enforcement, then some people will start using drugs and then they go into treatment and then they're in treatment 6-7 times and it costs us a whole lot. They really, really, really think that cops telling them to just say no will make people stop. It might for a few. Again, from 1980 to 92, we did have that decline in marijuana use, at least the report of marijuana use. Could be people just in a really heightened atmosphere of terror over their use of marijuana weren't as likely to open up about it. That could very well be. That's the mentality we're dealing with. Jeff Sessions is the perfect embodiment of the 1980s just say no mentality. And it's just my hope that there's so much scandal going on with this Russia stuff and this collusion stuff that they can't get their drug war 2.0 off the ground. All right, stay tuned. We're going to be back with some drug war data mining right after this.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
This November, whether you see the words medical marijuana on your ballot or not, the issue is there. From the halls of Congress to your state capitol or city hall, politicians are already making decisions on medical marijuana policy on your behalf. This election, make sure they are representing you. Every vote is a vote for medical marijuana.
Visit VoteMedicalMarijuana.org today.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the gay agenda, only with better music.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for a cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from the Burning Issues podcast on CannabisRadio.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
All right, in the data mines today, we return to my colleague Paul Armentano, who I worked with at Normal from 2008 to 2012, and he's always been one of my favorites when it comes to online activism and reporting because he gets right to the science, gets right to the studies. Probably nobody more educated on this topic than Paul Armentano. And in the Normal blog at blog.normal.org, from yesterday, he's got this great post up, and I just wanted to read it to you because it's wonderful. Yet another study has once again affirmed that the regulation of marijuana for medical or recreational purposes is not associated with increases in problematic cannabis use by young people. Writing in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry, federal investigators from the U.S. National Institutes of Drug Abuse and the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration evaluated marijuana use rates among young people ages 12 to 17 between the years 2002 and 2014. Researchers reported that the prevalence of past year cannabis use by youth fell 17% during this time period. The prevalence of problematic use by young people fell by 25%, with a downward trend starting in 2011. Authors concluded, quote, "In the United States, compared to 2002, even after adjusting for covariates, cannabis use decreased among youth during 2005 to 2014, and cannabis use disorder declined among youth cannabis users during 2013 to 2014, end quote. Study's findings are consistent with those of numerous other papers reporting no uptick in youth marijuana use or abuse following the enactment of marijuana regulation. The study, Cannabis Use and Cannabis Use Disorders in the United States 2002 through 2014, is available online through links you can find at blog.normal.org. And those other studies. Study from the CDC. Young people say marijuana is becoming less available. Study from the Journal of American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry says rates of problematic cannabis use fall among teens. The Journal of American Medical Association Psychiatry, no increase in problematic cannabis use. Lancet Psychiatry, passage of medical marijuana laws, not responsible for increased marijuana use. American Journal of Public Health, medical cannabis laws have no measurable impact on teen use rates. And from the Annals of Epidemiology, medical marijuana laws have no discernible adverse impact on adolescents' use. That's what we call data, ladies and gentlemen. Studies, actually checking the science on this to see did any sort of medical marijuana law cause a change.
Oh, I could have smoked that pot.
All right, that sound means that it's 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone. Time for us to take our union-mandated safety briefing. I'll be safe. I hope you will, too. We're back with some Reefer Madness Debunked. More on the hemp-derived CBD snake oil right after this. At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Did you know that in Georgia, one in 13 adults is in jail or prison or on parole or probation? As a mother and as a professional, I advocate for access to drug treatment instead of incarceration. We need you to join us in this important fight. This October, we're coming to Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Come lend your voice to the fight. Register now at reformconference.org.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for Police for Reform with Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death. Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he'd drop dead of fright.
You know, it's not easy trying to debunk 80 years of anti-marijuana propaganda in a one-hour podcast, but let's try. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda's Reefer Madness Debunked.
Today in Reefer Madness Debunked, we have to talk about a very rare, rare strain of Reefer Madness, and it's the kind of Reefer Madness that comes from our own side. And it pains me to have to keep debunking this, but I'm going to, because I just can't abide what's going on with this hemp-derived CBD oil, okay? Many people in our community are pushing this narrative that hemp-derived CBD oil is legal and legal in all 50 states, perfectly okay for everyone to use. Now, before we get into this, I got to be real clear that when we talk about hemp oil hucksters and hemp-derived CBD snake oil, and we call it snake oil and stuff like that, that is not to say that it is a compound that does not work. This is not a critique, a criticism of CBD oil itself. Although, I will add a critique that CBD oil without THC is not as beneficial. That many, many patients need THC or THCA with that CBD oil. So it's not an indictment of the effectiveness of CBD oil. Neither is this an indictment of manufacturing CBD oil, or being a patient and using CBD oil, or those two entities engaging in contract to provide CBD oil for those who need it. None of this that I'm about to say is against that. All of this is based on one very salient point, and that is CBD is a Schedule I controlled substance under federal law. Let's say this again. CBD is a Schedule I controlled substance under federal law. Now, it's easy enough to figure out that this is the case because marijuana-friendly representatives in the U.S. Congress have filed three different bills to remove, to specifically exempt cannabidiol, CBD, from the Controlled Substances Act. If it were already legal, why would we need those bills? If CBD oil is legal in all 50 states because it's derived from hemp, there's no need to legalize cannabidiol. There's no need to take it off the Controlled Substances Act. Why, if this CBD oil is legal in all 50 states, did 16 states not only go through the trouble and time to pass referenda and bills, actually they were all bills as far as I know, pass bills to legalize cannabidiol oil in their state, but in doing so also maintain the prohibition on actually cultivating it and selling it? If this hemp-derived CBD oil is legal in all 50 states, why did they have to pass a law to protect those who possess it and still maintain criminal penalties for those who manufacture or sell it? So let me just read the statement from the DEA. Media attention has focused on a derivative of marijuana that many refer to as Charlotte's Web or CBD oil. At present, this material is being illegally produced and marketed in the United States in violation of two federal laws, the Controlled Substances Act and the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. Because it is illicitly produced by clandestine manufacturers, its actual content is uncertain and will vary depending on the source of the material. However, it is generally believed that the material is an extract of a variety of the marijuana plant that has a very high ratio of cannabidiol to tetrahydrocannabinols. Because this extract is a derivative of marijuana, it falls within the definition of marijuana under federal law. Accordingly, it is a Schedule I controlled substance under the Controlled Substance Act. As with all controlled substances, it is illegal under the Controlled Substances Act to produce or distribute Charlotte's Web CBD oil or any other marijuana derivative, except by persons who are registered with DEA to do so. Because Charlotte's Web CBD oil is not an FDA-approved drug, it is a Schedule I controlled substance under the Controlled Substances Act. It is unlawful under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act for any practitioner to provide the material to human beings under the guise of research without first submitting an investigational new drug application to the FDA. The Controlled Substances Act requires that any person seeking to conduct research with the material obtain a registration with DEA authorizing such research. And the CEA further requires that the researcher obtain the Schedule I material from a legally authorized producer. All of these requirements are essential to protecting human research subjects from the potential dangers of using an experimental drug and are essential to the scientific integrity of research. Because Charlotte's Web is reportedly being administered to pediatric research subjects, the potential dangers are even more pronounced, making compliance with the FDA requirement even more crucial. It is important to correct a misconception that some have about the effect of the Agricultural Act of 2014, which some refer to as the Farm Bill, on the legal status of Charlotte's Web CBD oil. Section 7606 of the Agricultural Act of 2014 authorizes institutions of higher education, that is, universities, and state departments of agriculture to grow and cultivate industrial hemp, defined under the Act as marijuana with a THC content of 0.3% or less, for agricultural research purposes where permitted under state law. However, the Agricultural Act of 2014 does not permit such entities or anyone else to produce non-FDA-approved drug products made from cannabis. Thus, the CSA and FDCA restrictions mentioned above remain in effect with respect to the production of Charlotte's Web CBD oil for human consumption. Now, that's the statement that was delivered by the DEA for CBD. This was July 5th. On July 7th, Joel Stanley, the CEO of the Charlotte's Web Company, responded to this. And understand, Charlotte's Web, CW Hemp, manufactures this stuff and distributes it all over. And he says that not only does their statement contradict federal law, its very issuance is illegal. Now, what he's referring to is the Rohrabacher-Farr Amendment, which says that federal funds may not be used to prohibit the transportation, processing, sale, or use of industrial hemp that is grown or cultivated in accordance with Section 7606 of the Agricultural Act of 2014 within or outside the state in which the industrial hemp is grown or cultivated. Now, this is that kind of shifty language that they like to use, so they can't get pinned down on telling you what they're telling you. But here's what he's trying to do. Section 7606 of the Agricultural Act, the industrial hemp thing, does allow them to grow industrial hemp, and that is plants that are less than 0.3% THC. It's not the stuff extracted from the plants. It's the plants. And this Appropriation Act says that we cannot prohibit the transportation, processing, sale, or use of industrial hemp. Means the processing of hemp products, not medical products. And that's what the DEA keeps pointing out. Yeah, you want to process hemp into clothes and fiber and, you know, the seed oil for lubrication or running car engines or whatever. Great, go for it. But no, you're not going to make a medicine and not send it through the FDA. Now, again, this argument is not me saying I agree with the DEA. It's not me saying that this is the right way to go. It's not me saying that this should be the way it is. But I am saying, as far as the DEA, you know, the people with the power to break down your doors and seize your assets, they think it's illegal. And so far, everything under the law agrees with them as far as it being illegal, because people have been and continue to be busted over this stuff. But he's trying to say that because the feds have said, the Congress has said that the DOJ can't spend money to prohibit this going on, them just even saying that it's illegal acts as it prohibiting it going on, but it's already prohibited. So it's a circular logic thing. Now, the next thing he tries to say, the DEA says that it's violating Controlled Substance Act and the FDCA, Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act. Stanley comes on to say, not true. In Section 7606 of the Farm Bill, the Controlled Substances Act, and any other federal laws specifically non-withstood before defining industrial hemp and legalizing its domestic cultivation and marketing for the first time since 1937. And again, yes, you can cultivate hemp. Section 7606 says, yes, you can do that. That's fine. Hemp itself is not violating the Controlled Substances Act. Then he goes on to refer back to the, you know, with the varying material, and he says that Charlotte's Web is produced in an FDA-registered laboratory and independently certified for compliance with a 98.9% audit, right? Look, what the state of Colorado thinks and the labs that are licensed by the state of Colorado, and just because a lab is FDA-registered doesn't mean that all the work it's doing isn't necessarily stuff the FDA approves of. Doesn't matter to the feds. Now we get to the meat of this, where he says that, so the DEA says Charlotte's Web is not an FDA-approved drug. It's a Schedule I controlled substance. Stanley says, not true. The CSA does not contain the terms cannabidiol, cannabinoids, or hemp. In order for these to be included in the Controlled Substances Act and officially become law, it would take an act of Congress passed by the House and Senate and signed by the President. This is that tired old argument that, the DEA is trying to make a law. They're trying to put CBD into the Controlled Substances Act. It's always been there. The federal definition of marijuana says marijuana refers to living plants, dead plants, and anything you extract from them, except stuff you extract from stalks and seeds. So anything that's coming from cannabis, tetrahydrocannabivarin, cannabigerol, cannabichromine, the terpenes that are coming from cannabis, anything you're extracting from that resin is marijuana, is a controlled substance. Now, are they going to go after you if you've got a whole bunch of pinene and myrcene that you extracted from cannabis and you're selling it to people? Are they going to go after you? No. Are they going to go after you for CBD? Maybe, especially as GW Pharmaceuticals starts to get its Sativex up online and passed through FDA trials and sold in pharmacies. You're going to bet they're going to pressure the FDA and the DEA to put these hemp companies out of business that are competing with them. No, cannabidiol is not in the Controlled Substances Act. That's absolutely true. The word cannabidiol, the word cannabinoids, the word hemp is not in the Controlled Substances Act. But what is there is anything you extract from marijuana is illegal. And cannabidiol is one of those things. Now, the what's the other one? Oh, he tries to attack this one where the DEA says the Farm Bill 7606 only allows ag departments and universities to grow industrial hemp. Doesn't allow other entities. He replies, Stanley replies, not true. Charlotte's Web and many other domestic hemp products are cultivated in full compliance with the Farm Bill under appropriate licensing for respective state departments of agriculture in Colorado and Kentucky. Furthermore, according to the Continuing Appropriations Acts, it is the expressed intent of Congress that hemp cultivated in compliance with the Farm Bill be intended for transportation, processing, and sale. Again, he is trying to say here that because Colorado and Kentucky have gone ahead and allowed hemp growers to grow stuff, and the Stanley brothers are getting their stuff from Colorado hemp growers under the Farm Bill, that somehow this is legalizing cannabidiol. No, the industrial hemp that they produced is legal under the Farm Bill. The cannabidiol that's extracted from resin is not. It's hard to understand how much more we can explain this. The DEA has been pretty clear on it. And I've written numerous articles on this to explain in great detail. But when your company is built on charging people hundreds of bucks per pure gram of CBD, betting on desperate, desperate people in prohibition states who have no access to this stuff, that you're going to sell it for hundreds of bucks an ounce, and not tell them that the DEA thinks this is illegal, and to get them to buy in to your tortured legal logic, a theory that has yet to be proven, and is so far been proven to be wrong because numerous people have been busted for this stuff already, is just wrong. And so when I read in this op-ed Joel Stanley say, Charlotte's Web is more than a brand or a product. It's a movement of people looking for better solutions that put daughters, sons, mothers, and fathers first, that connect serious science and the power of nature, that understand we are living in precarious times, but fearlessly believe everyone deserves quality of life. Yeah, if you can afford $129 an ounce per pure gram of CBD. In my mind, a movement of people looking for better solutions that understood the power of nature would be cloning as many Charlotte Web plants as possible and giving those clones away to as many people nationwide as possible. But from what I understand, you can't get a clone of that stuff. You can't get that from them. I wonder why they do that. If they were so committed to making sure that CW Hemp is to protect, their mission is to protect a community whose members find themselves and their families on their last health option, one that can mean the difference between life and death. Well, gosh, it's a weed, isn't it? Like, if we gave this away to as many people as possible, why, it would save a whole lot of lives, wouldn't it? Oh, look, I know people have to make a living, there have to be businesses, etc. I understand that. But how much money you gotta make? If you really cared about these poor kids like Charlotte Feige, you wouldn't be charging $129 a gram per pure gram of this oil to ship to people. You'd be shipping them seeds. You'd be shipping them clones. You'd be finding a way to get as many people growing that plant as possible, as many people harvesting it and processing it in their basements as possible, and make it so that everybody in every state has access to this CBD oil. Excuse me if I don't believe your concern trolling on this issue. All right, we got to take a break. And when we come back, we'll finish up with some of the rest of the news here in the wide world of weed. I'm Radical Russ. You can email me, russ@mjagenda.com. Follow me at Radical Russ on literally everything.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job.
Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to mjagenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. If you're an organization or business looking to promote your brand, we have sponsorship patronage available at mjagenda.com. Sponsorship includes 15 and 30 second ad breaks and 6-minute interviews on the podcast, depending on sponsorship level, which begins at $19.99 a month. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at mjagenda.com.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
This is high purity THC content marijuana, and it's not a healthy substance.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Cannabis Minority Report from the Minority Cannabis Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Pod 2.0. Not your father's Woodstock weed. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everyone. And for this segment, I want to talk a little more philosophically, culturally, anthropologically, perhaps. And it has to do with the appearance of actor Woody Harrelson on Stephen Colbert's program the other night. Yesterday's show, I guess. No, Monday's show. Anyway, Woody Harrelson was on Stephen Colbert's show. And eventually it got around to the topic of weed, as it would, where Stephen Colbert asks Woody Harrelson, "I heard that you aren't smoking marijuana anymore." And Harrelson, without missing a beat, says, "Yeah, but I'm not smoking any less." Which is one of my stock answers. I was really happy he used that. But then he went on to talk about how he's given up smoking marijuana. Although he did quip at the end of the appearance that you don't have to smoke a brownie, right? So he may have pulled a Bill Clinton on that. You know that old Bill Clinton story, right? When Clinton said he didn't inhale, I tried marijuana a time or two, and I did not like it. No, I did not inhale, right? When he said all that, Christopher Hitchens, the late author, went to Oxford at the same time as Bill Clinton and said that Clinton was a big fan of the brownies. And so, yeah, when he said, "I didn't inhale after that, never tried it again," he meant inhaling. He never tried inhaling again. Well, that's the story. And so, he might have been pulling one of those kind of deals, right, where he's just skirting the issue. But Woody Harrelson says he doesn't smoke pot anymore. And it brought something up that I wanted to talk about, which is, are we a people? Because when I think of this issue, I feel like we are a people. That it's not so much that they're banning marijuana, it's that they're stigmatizing us. That they're demonizing and scapegoating a people, a group, right? And sometimes I get people that, you know, that disagree with me on this, because they say, "Well, you know, you choose to smoke pot. Not like you're born a pothead. You choose to smoke pot." To which I always answer, "Yeah, but you choose to be Catholic, don't you? You choose to be Republican, don't you?
Right? Nobody's born Republican. Nobody's born Catholic. Now, you might be born into a Catholic family that introduces you to Catholicism from a very young age. You may be born into a Republican family where conservative values are all you know. But you are choosing to remain a Catholic or choosing to remain a Republican. And you could say, you know, Muslim or Democrat, whatever, right? You're choosing, right? But we have laws that protect people in those groups who made those choices. We have laws that protect them from discrimination, from being mistreated, from being attacked and scapegoated like that. Or at least we have social mores that it's wrong to attack people like that. So that makes them a people, right? So why are we not a people for making a choice to consume cannabis? And again, some of us may have been born into pothead families. And we've always known, you know, we've been born into the canna family. And we've always known cannabis. And it's always been a part of our lives. So how are we not a people? And the flip side of that is when someone like Woody Harrelson or Miley Cyrus, when they say, well, I stopped smoking pot. When we hear that, it feels like I'm not one of you anymore. I've separated myself from the group. I'm no longer part of the family. But you know what? I don't think so. To me, Woody Harrelson's still in the family. Miley Cyrus, she can get out, but Woody's definitely in the family. Because what is it that defines us as a pot smoker? Are you a pot smoker because you're smoking pot right now? Because you smoked pot today? Because you smoked pot this week? Or this month? Or this year? Or 5 years ago? Or what is it that makes you one of us? What puts you in this group? Is there a cutoff? Oh, I only smoked twice this month. I better get on the stick. I won't be one of the canna family anymore. I won't be a smoker anymore. I don't think that can be the definition. I've stopped smoking pot. I've given up smoking pot for months. But I never felt like I wasn't still part of the group. But it's something I got to thinking about when Woody was saying that, because I still feel like Woody Harrelson's one of us. I still felt like Woody would feel at home hanging out on Honeysuckle Rose with Willie Nelson. But if someone says they're giving it up, right? Is that what makes the difference? Like, I've stopped smoking pot not out of a statement like, I am now hereby declaring I shall not smoke pot again, right? There's never been one of those things. It's been like, oh, fuck, I'm in Wyoming. Can't find any pot. Damn. Oh, well, I guess we're just not going to smoke pot. We're in Wyoming and that's the way it is. All right. Well, I guess we won't smoke pot for a while. So the fact that I didn't state that I was going to stop smoking pot, is that why I'm still a pothead when I'm not smoking in Wyoming or wherever the hell, right? Is it the statement that you're leaving the group? Is that what makes it? I don't know. It's just something I thought about, because when I saw that piece and Colbert getting into him on that, it reminds me of one of the stereotypes, one of the denigrations that we suffer all the time, and that is this idea that marijuana is a flight of fancy. It's a flight of fancy for frivolous youth. It's something you did in youthful indiscretion. Right? When I was younger, I inhaled. That was the point. But now I'm a mature, grown-up adult, and we don't do such childish things. That's kind of the context of it, right? That's when Woody Harrelson's talking like that. And it wasn't even so much Woody talking about it. It was more the frame from which Stephen Colbert talks about it. Because, you know, Colbert is cool with the weed. I have the feeling he's cool with weed and cool with the legalization of it. And I think even for maybe on occasion, if not currently, has used marijuana. I mean, he was at Second City. Was he with Second City or Groundlings? But he was in comedy troupes and in theater, and, you know, weed's going to be around. So I don't think he's got an issue with it, a problem with it, but he's got that strong Catholic background, you know? Oh, and that brings me back, right? So tolerance breaks and taking a break and saying you don't smoke pot anymore, is that what makes you no longer a pothead? Because how many people out there, as Colbert says on his show often, don't go to Catholic Mass often? but they still consider themselves Catholic because they believe in a certain ethos. There's a creed to Catholicism. There's a belief system. There's a morality set up there. So do we have that as a people, as pot people? Do we have this belief? Like, is someone who used to smoke pot but never smokes pot anymore, but supports its legalization, has no problem with the community, are they one of us? Like, could Stephen Colbert be one of us? Even though, let's say he hasn't smoked pot in 10, 20 years. It's interesting to think about how we think of ourselves as a people or as a group. But to me, I think we deserve as much protection as Catholics and Republicans do, right? It should be against the law to discriminate against us based on what we choose to do with our bodies. That's the other thing I think is important in framing this, is presenting it that way. They want to present it as, oh, you're just libertine and wanting to take drugs and have fun and just, you know, be selfish and arrogant and not care about society. No, this is a matter of personal bodily sovereignty, right? What if there was some company out there that wanted to discriminate in hiring against women who'd had abortions? Well, people would have a freak fit, man. They'd scream from the top of their lungs. You can't do that. You can't discriminate against women just because they had abortions. Well, we deserve the same kind of protection. We're just choosing to do with our body something. We're choosing to do something with our body. A woman who has an abortion is choosing to do something to her body. A person who gets a tattoo is deciding to do something to their body. And so long as that's not impacting the workplace or society in any way, it shouldn't be cause for discrimination. But it is. We continue to be discriminated against. We continue to be a group that, at least at minimum, it's okay to make fun of. Yeah, I always get the pot pun headlines, right? I always wondered, like, what if you took the same sort of sarcastic wit that gets used to make pot pun headlines? Oh, that went up in smoke. Ha 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 ha. Oh, they're going to hash it out. Ha ha ha. Right? All those pot pun headlines. What if that was the same sort of tone used to cover gay and lesbian issues or women's issues or minority issues? What if they use the same sort of puns and jokes? And I'm not going to try to make any comparative jokes because I'll probably step way over the line, but what if they use some of those same sort of tactics on reporting on gay issues? I'll try. Let me try one. They tried to swish away that law, right? Or that code, right? There's a gay pun, right? Ha ha. They swished away in the meeting. I mean, what if well, the meeting of the NAACP started as we'd expect, late, right? Whereas you could say something like, well, they were high, so who knows, they might have forgot. Ha ha ha. What are they smoking? Ha ha ha. But if you said something like, oh, they're starting it late because it's the NAACP, oh, there'd be some hell to pay for that kind of comment, wouldn't there? Yeah, this is the way I think of this stuff, man. I see no reason we should not be treated as equals to beer drinkers and cigar smokers. Why what we do with our lungs and our brains is any different than what guys and gals want to do with their bodies in other circumstances. All right, we'll be right back and wrap things up here on this hump day. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest-growing business association and the fastest-growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose, deaths, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
I'm Russ Belleville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Cultivator's Corner with Jorge Cervantes from MarijuanaGrowing.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everyone. As we close up shop, I sit here just wishing I was rich. I know we all do, right? But I wish I had... I don't need to be rich. I just need to have enough money to do the stuff I want to do. Right? I don't need to be rich. I don't even need to be like Richard Branson, yacht club helicopter rich. I just need to be rich enough that I could go get some hemp stocks and take them down to a laboratory. There's plenty of them here in Oregon. Take some hemp stocks. This is because we got hemp growers too. I want to go to a hemp grower and collect a bunch of hemp stocks. And I want to wash those hemp stocks, strip any resin that might be sticking to the hemp stocks. I'm going to take them to an Oregon lab. I want to say, I want you to tell me how much CBD is in those hemp stocks. Because really, all of their arguments here are all hinged on this idea that, well, it's derived from hemp and hemp is legal. And so if it's hemp, the stuff that comes from hemp is legal. And so it's CBD that came from hemp stocks, and anything you get from hemp stocks is okay. So it's got to be legal. Prove it. Prove it that you're getting this stuff from hemp stocks. Let's take it to a lab and put the stocks in the lab and let's see how much cannabidiol we get out of them. Now, you'll get tiny trillionths of an amount. The kind of amounts where, like, if you grew acres of stocks, you might get an ounce out of CBD out of it. It's just not happening unless you're getting it from the resin that's sticking to the stocks, and anything that comes from resin is illegal, no matter how or who grew that plant. It's just so clear and black and white, and they're trying to use shifty talk, legalese, and conflating hemp oil, and CBD without properly considering the delineations there. It's sad. And we will continue to debunk this every chance we get. One final note before we wrap up. I want to remind everyone that next Monday night, starting at 9:26 p.m. Pacific and running all the way till 1 in the morning, I will be the guest on Midnight in the Desert with Heather Wade, which is the successor show to Coast AM with Art Bell. So we're going to be talking for damn near 4 hours, 3.5 hours, about marijuana on one of the most popular talk radio programs that airs late at night. So I hope you can join me. I'm going to be drinking a lot of rock stars. Make sure I can stay up for that one. I can't wait to be on the program. Some of our moderators have the link if you want to listen to it on TuneIn if it's not on one of your local radio stations. All right, that's all the time we got for today. For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, thanks for joining us. Check us out on Airbnb at delta9house.com. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.